This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station. This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, this is Frida Liu. You're listening to Enterprise. Listen, companies comply with corporate governance, or CG, because this is required by the regulators and expected by the investors. However, even SMEs can benefit from the basic principles of CG. It helps to protect their business and make it more valuable if they want to sell it in the future. What are some things SMEs take for granted or don't think is important? Dr. Elsa Sakunasingam, governance specialist, is here to shed some light. So, Dr. Elsa, what is corporate governance in a nutshell?
Well, the general accepted definition is that it's a system by which companies are directed and controlled. You know, but for SMEs, they're not obliged to follow the law. So I would actually say that, you know, if you have a business and your corporate governance will actually help you to make sure that you're on the right path, that you're able to deal with unforeseen risks and that you don't get into issues where, you know, there might be fraud in your company and things like that. So I would say that, you know, corporate governance is that in a nutshell to SMEs.
And you would have heard all the different stories, right? And I guess when people think of, oh, corporate governance, it's like, it seems like a chore. Right? It seems like more a challenge, more, you know, it's time wasting rather than beneficial. The first thing is a mindset, right?
Yes. You know, people look at it as compliance.
Yes.
Actually, it's about protection.
Right.
Yeah. Because if you look at an SME, it actually needs to bother with corporate governance, because it needs to put in place good internal controls and risk management. And of course, as you said earlier, it will improve access to finance or if you ever want to sell your business. Mm. But on a more personal note, it actually helps you to rely less on key personalities in your business and also reduces conflict in a family-run business. Because very often a company might be set up by, you know, family members, and then it grows and grows. Mm. And then after some time, there's conflict in the family, there's issues of succession planning. Right. Your child or my child should take over the company in future.
Right, right.
But governance helps with those things.
Right. I like your comment. It's protection, you know, it's not just compliance.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, when we think of corporate governance, right, because that's the you know, I think of this image of auditors and all that. But really, if you have all these things in place, it's actually good for you. Right. So is then, you know, CG relevant to SMEs? Because we always think it's only relevant mostly to large companies that are listed.
Yes, I think so. You know, you don't have to follow what the large companies do.
Right.
It might be too much for SMEs, but what you can do is scale it down, scale down the principles. For example, you know, large companies or listed companies are required to have a board of directors with all the formalities attached to that.
Mm.
You don't need that if you have an SME, but you could have a board of advisors, for example.
Right.
You know, this is even recommended by the International Finance Corporation.
Right.
When they are, you know, coming up with guidelines with SMEs, this is one of the recommendations.
Mm.
So what is a board of advisors? It's basically people around you, nothing formal, nothing that will cost you. You know, you don't have to pay them a fee, but just people around you that you would go to as a sounding board.
Right.
A board of directors in formal corporate governance is required to be, you know, diverse, for example, gender diversity, their background, their skills. Why not apply it to your SMEs?
Right.
If I may give an example for this, you know, there was a company or an organization where there were a group of women who set up a restaurant, a Nyonya restaurant, and they had really good food.
Mm.
They did their study, you know, they went around, they found out no such restaurant in that area, and they set it up.
Mm.
But because they didn't actually talk to a diverse group of people, they didn't realize that today, it's especially with the MCO,
right,
it's really difficult for a restaurant to survive unless it's on Grab, it's on Foodpanda, or, you know, you have social influencers. You know how to manage social media to get the message out.
Right.
They were working on in the old-fashioned way of word of mouth.
Okay.
So that's an example of what a board of advisors can do.
Right, just a very simple example, right? Because there you have three ladies in their 50s and probably not very comfortable with online media and knowing that it's so necessary right now. And when you have a diverse, you know, a young boy or whatever, I'm saying young boy,
exactly.
You know, so just different people from diverse backgrounds to see something that you can't see, right? So,
yes,
yeah.
Exactly.
Right, okay. Now, there are quite a few cases of business people losing money because it was stolen by their employees. Now, could this be due to lack of internal controls?
Oh, definitely. You can. You need to put in place internal controls. It sounds like such a big word, but
right.
Actually it's not. Business owners already do it, but it's just that they may not know that it's called internal controls.
Mm.
You know, when you go into a business, usually you might have trusted employees or even family members that have come into the business or come to help you.
Mm.
So what you need to do is, of course, you have to trust your employees and family members, but you also need to put processes in place.
Mm.
I always say document, document, document. Simple processes. When you want to take money out of the petty cash, you have to sign this very simple form, for example.
Mm.
Okay? So I think internal controls are really important to prevent fraud. You know, there was a boutique owner who was selling high-end clothes, and she brought her nephew into the business, and, you know, together they worked. He handled the sales and the financial side.
Mm.
She did the design. And everything went on well, and then she found that there was a slight drop in the takings by about 20%.
Mm.
What she didn't realize is that this nephew of hers had, you know, run debt through online gambling. So
okay.
He had, you know, run into some trouble.
Mm.
And he was selling the clothes in the boutique at a 40% discount if people paid cash.
Oh.
So he took the cash and used it for his gambling habit.
Right.
And made excuses to her, like, I sent this outfit to a different outlet.
Right.
Or, you know, excuses like slight damage or it's not sold yet.
Wow.
She only found out when she met clients outside wearing her clothes. And she thought, hey, this nephew told me that it's not sold, but this client is wearing it. The first time or so, she discounted it. She thought, man, it's been a mistake. It's my nephew. He'll never do this to me.
Right.
But it happened too often.
Right.
And then she found out that there was a real issue, you know, that obviously the nephew had been lying to her.
Hmm.
So very often SMEs may run into this problem because you trust the person so much that you don't put processes in place.
Okay. Right. Okay. So in this case, right, what could have been done to prevent this from happening?
Well, she could have done spot checks. She could have done better stock taking. She left all the stock taking to him.
Mm.
She could have had some independent person come in or done it herself from time to time. Just to make sure that everything is above board.
Right. Any other good stories?
Yeah, good stories.
Good stories. Okay. Good for us to listen and learn. Okay.
I'll give you two more examples.
Right.
A few years ago, I belonged to a gym and so did a friend of mine.
Mm.
And this gym had a spa attached to it.
Mm.
And my friend told me, hey, you know, the massages at this spa and the facials are usually over 100 ringgit. Now they're being offered for about 50 ringgit if you buy a whole package of 20 or something.
Right.
And she said, it's a really good deal. She said, but it's better if you pay by cash.
Hmm.
Okay. So I didn't have time to go down and I'm glad I didn't, because what happened is the employee was telling customers or clients that if you pay cash, you get 50 ringgit on the massages. Now, you can also get it if you pay by credit card, but he was trying to persuade people to pay by cash. He took the cash. When it came to the credit card, he got his commission, but somebody wasn't checking the number of sessions recorded.
Right.
He ran off with the money. The gym was stuck with the customers who were demanding a massage at 50 ringgit, which was really unsustainable.
Right.
Needless to say, you know, the gym closed down.
Oh, dear. Okay.
Yeah. But on a positive note, let's look at what good internal controls can do.
Mm.
I know of this husband and wife team that set up a business with two other partners.
Mm.
Right from day one, they set in processes.
Okay.
If you want to make claims, you need to issue original receipts. Okay. There's no such thing as, oh, because it's the husband or the wife.
Yeah.
Or we know each other, so we don't need to do that. They even color-coded the
Okay.
The claim. So if you're asking for parking, you might get a yellow form to fill up. Mm. If you're maybe entertainment claims, it's a different form.
Mm.
And everybody had to do that.
Mm.
And if petty cash was taken out for any reason, the accounts clerk was told to email all the partners to just say this amount was taken out by so-and-so.
Mm.
And it's been almost 20 years. They've never had an issue in their business at all with money going missing.
Right. So it's like you get all these things in place, especially at the beginning. And then so it's very clear. So it won't become an issue down the road, especially when you're doing business with friends and all that. Right. So it just becomes this process. It's actually, and it's good for everybody as well. All right. We're talking about corporate governance in small and medium enterprises with Dr. Elsa Sakunasingam. We'll continue our conversation after this. BFM 89.9.
Be free-minded. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
You're listening to Enterprise. Good morning. This is Frida Liu. I'm here with Dr. Elsa Sakunasingam, Head of Corporate Governance. Corporate governance in small and medium enterprises, something we thought it was just reserved for, the public listed companies, but something that, you know, SMEs should consider because, as Dr. Elsa said earlier, protection. Think of it as protection and not, you know, a case of compliance and we have to do. The other thing as well, right, you know, when I used to work for a large MSC and we talk about, you know, procurement process, you need to have three vendors and all that. Now, should all companies have a procurement process of three vendors, even if they're an SME?
I think so, because I think this is the place where there can be a lot of what we call bleeding or losses, money. So, yes, you should have a procurement process. Now, if you're a sole proprietor, it makes sense to scout around, get your quotes and take the best.
Mm.
But if you're in a partnership or you're relying on employees or other family members in your business, then it's good to have something simple. You don't need to have a complicated procurement process.
Right.
You just have to state, you know, the process very simply, and you should state that as far as possible, maybe you get quotes from three people or five people, depending.
Right.
Right. Right? And you should also put in place internal controls,
right,
which means that you have to actually go into this procurement process yourself from time to time. You have to check, it, what I call a spot check, to make sure that all is above board, you see.
Mm. Okay, all right. Now I'll give you an example as well. Like, I mean, simple thing, right? If an employee has an events company, right, and tells employer to use his events company, and it's all above board, right? So they know. Is that okay?
Yes and no. It's okay if it's documented.
Right.
But I would advise against having something informal. For example, you have five employees in your company, you want a particular service or you need some goods, and your employee comes to you and says, look, my mother or my sister or cousin or something, they can supply this. Then what you should do is, you should actually have some process in your company to say that if any of the suppliers are related to you, you must disclose it.
Right.
And stress on that.
Right.
After which, when you get the quote or you get the product, you do test it against others to make sure that you're actually getting the best deal and that the employee is not being biased.
Right.
Now, why do I say that you need to put the process in place?
Mm.
Because down the line, if let's say 5 years down the line, this employee leaves, a new employee comes in and finds out that so-and-so's mother, the previous employee's mother, was actually supplying goods, he turns around and thinks that, oh, that's a good reason to get my family into this business. You know,
right.
I can recommend my family members who can provide goods or services to the company. He doesn't realize the part about disclosure.
Mm.
So it's very important to stress on the disclosure and try and make sure that the employee is not the sole deciding person.
Mm.
Because then they will go around employing their family members.
Right, so you open a can of worms, basically.
You do. I'm not saying that it can't be done. Sometimes your employees can actually give you the best deal because they do know the right people. And so what if they're related to the employee?
Mm.
But put the internal controls in place, the proper processes in place,
okay,
you know, to do this.
Right.
You know, when it comes to a situation like this, very often the employee justifies it by saying, why should I tell the employer? The employer didn't ask me a specific question. And I'm giving my employer the best deal. Nobody can give the product at this price and this quality. So the employee thinks that he's actually doing the company a favor, but it can cause a lot of problems down the line if you don't force them to disclose. And tell them that if I find out that it's your family member who's been supplying the products to me, however good the products are, and you didn't disclose, it's actually just cause for you know, me to take disciplinary action against you. Send that message very clearly.
Right. Now, what is a simple risk map and possible risks that, you know, companies should look at?
Okay. All companies should assess their risks and put in place plans to mitigate it. Now, I'm very sure that all business people know this and they actually do it. But there's a difference between knowing it in your head and actually putting it down on paper, right? So a risk map is very simple. It's just like a quadrant where you say, okay, what are all the risks that could happen to my company, from the most likely risk to unlikely risks? So you put that, write that down, and then you say, okay, take each risk and say, what is the likelihood of this risk happening, and what is the damage or the harm that it can do to my company? So if the risk is very likely to happen, but the harm is, you know, really so small, then I can kind of discount it.
Right.
If it's likely to happen and the harm can be medium to high, I better take action to do something to prevent this.
Right.
You know, for example, the simplest example I can give you is you run a restaurant. What is the worst thing that can happen? Well, I suspect it's food poisoning. Imagine if you're catering, you know, for a wedding or all your customers for that day, you know, 300 customers come down with food poisoning and it's linked to you. That's so damaging.
Right.
So what steps will you take to prevent this from happening? You can't come up with a zero risk because that's not going to happen.
Right.
But you can take steps. Always maintain the hygiene and talk to your employees about the importance of this and the fact that the whole restaurant could be closed down. They could lose their job if they don't actually adhere to this.
Right.
And tied to this are internal controls. You can tell your employees things, but how do you know that they're watching, that they're actually following it when you're not around? So I talked to this restaurant owner who says that he has a wide circle of friends and sends different people at different times to just kind of scan the restaurant to see if the employees are actually, you know, adhering to certain processes.
Right.
He peeks into the kitchen. His friends peep into the kitchen. They sit around. They see the service that's being offered. So that's a form of internal control, actually.
Right. Okay. Now, okay, again, you know, maybe just to talk about, for example, you are, you know, in an organization, right? Who should be the people looking at CG? I would assume it's the CEO for sure. Who else should be part of that process?
Okay, in a large company, there are certain groups of people. You know, you've got a company secretary, the CEO, the board, internal audit and all. In an SME, it is quite fluid. It is always the person running the business. It is always the owner. You could do, you know, most people just audit the account. If you want to pay more, you might actually bring in someone. If not, if you don't have the money at the moment, then find people who are experts in the field. If you have a friend who's an auditor, ask the friend for a favor. Can you just give me some ideas? Can you come in? Can you check these things? Can you sit with me to do a risk map, for example? Can you advise me on where I can get a board of advisors? Because, you know, this is my business. Who are the kinds of people that I need to bounce ideas off? So that's an example. But it's definitely not formal, unlike large companies.
Right. Okay. Now, you know, very interesting. You talked about how we need to look at this because it's not, you know, CG is not just about compliance, it's about protection. But also, what does it mean if one day you want to sell the company and possibly list? Why is CG important?
Well, if you want to sell your company or even bring in investment because you want to grow and you want a loan or, you know, people to invest, the one thing they will look at is our documents.
Right.
And they may not just stick with the financials. They might actually want more information. So the more you document, the better it is. For example, simple conversation between partners can be documented. right? You don't even have to have a formal minutes of meeting. That's, you know, you probably don't have the time for that.
Right.
But you can have something simple, an email to confirm your conversation, maybe even record the meeting. And all this can be used as for the investor to or the buyer as part of due diligence. The more documentation that is, the better it is for you, the easier it is for the investor to conduct due diligence.
Right.
So I would actually say that's how sieging helps. And studies have found out, especially the International Finance Corporation has done some studies, and found out that when you have good corporate governance in your company, you actually can you know, have a premium of 20 to 30% when you sell your business compared to somebody else with the same financials that doesn't practice good sieging.
Right. Okay. Well, this has been very enlightening, and about things that we need to do, organize. Small companies need to do, large and small, you know, and just to get yourself protected, you know, by following CG for your own organization, and don't think of it as like punishment, like compliance, but it's actually good for your company. Thank you for shedding some light on this. I've been speaking to Dr. Elsa Sakunasingam, Governance Specialist. This is Enterprise, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.